Hello, this is Kirk Benrud with the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I'll be reading movie reviews and theater previews. These are reviews of movies and previews of local theater that are available with audio description. And so what do we got live? Well, in the middle of the month, that would be January 16th, 2011. It's a Sunday afternoon, 2 p.m. Burning Coal Theater offers Blue. And as always, they're offering us 5 pairs of free tickets for our listeners, so stand by for how you can get those. A little further down the road on Wednesday, January 26th, it's a 1 p.m. show, The Lion King, at the Durham Performing Arts Center in Durham. Friday, February 25th, 8 p.m., Justice Theater Project offers Tuesdays with Maury. And those are the three live shows that I've got full information about. I give you. There's also going to be one called The Shape of the Table, which will be down the road at Burning Coal Theater after Blue closes. But let's see what we can say about Blue. Something old, something new, something borrowed, something blue. Blue is a whimsical dramedy about a young woman, Louise, who married her sweetheart, Adagio, when both were quite young. Now, as she discovers that some of the charm of their youthful passion is wearing off, she sets out in search for a new passion, an adult passion that can feed her adult needs. She winds up at a circus and enthralled to William, a blue worm who is also a circus performer. The play asks us to consider the choice between relationships that are built on years of consistency and grace versus those that are arrived at through the first blush of romantic longing. Well, the playwright is named Kelly Doyle, and she's a writer, a performer, and a director who works in theater, film, and television. She's had other plays done in the area here. One was called The Hole, another was called Dirt, and she was a recent finalist in the Actors Theater of Louisville 10-Minute Play Festival, and in 2010 she received an artist development grant from the United Arts Council of Raleigh, North Carolina. She's an alumna of Brown University's playwriting program and has an MFA from California Institute of the Arts. Now, in the cast, we've got Clemson drama teacher Carrie Seymour as Louise, Durham-based John Allor as William, and Raleigh-based actor John Jimerson as Adagio. This is the first time since Burning Coal's first ever play, which was Rat in the Skull 14 years ago, that Burning Coal has worked with a group of actors completely new to the Burning Coal main stage. The director is Mark Such, who is an assistant professor of theater at Davidson College, where he teaches acting, directing, voice and movement, and play analysis. He joined the faculty of Davidson in 2006 after serving for 5 years as artistic associate and casting director for Rhode Island's Trinity Repertory Company. In 2009, Mark directed Hair for Burning Coal at Trinity Rep. He's directed productions of A Christmas Carol, Suddenly Last Summer, and appeared in productions of Peter Pan, The Henriad, and A Christmas Carol. At the same time, he was artistic producer for the Trinity Summer Shakespeare Project, which toured throughout the Northeast and for which he directed Macbeth, The Comedy of Errors, and The Two Gentlemen of Verona. At Davidson, he has directed Dark Ride, Women Beware Women, Hamlet, and Leading Ladies. He's a member of Actors Equity Association and the Society of Stage Directors and Choreographers. Now, if you're interested in the play, of course, call Burning Coal's managing director at 834-4001. That's 834-4001. Or their website can be visited at www.burningcoal.org. If you're interested in getting some of the free tickets, well, you got to call us first. As always, TRRS is at 832-5138 or 919-832-5138. Just call up and say, I want a couple of the free tickets to Blue at Burning Coal Theater, and we'll get you squared away. Well, what else is on the agenda? Now, as I mentioned a second ago, that there's at the Durham Performing Arts Council is The Lion King. Well, let's take a look at what that's all about. Deepak tells us to experience the phenomenon. The Triangle's most eagerly awaited stage production ever will leap onto the Deepak stage this season. Visually stunning, technically astounding, and with a musical score that's like none other you've ever heard. Giraffes strut, birds swoop, gazelles leap. The entire savanna comes to life as the music soars. Pride Rock slowly emerges from the midst. See the Tony Award-winning Broadway sensation that Newsweek calls a landmark event in entertainment. The New York Times says there is simply nothing else like it. Marvel at the breathtaking spectacle of animals brought to life by a cast of more than 40 actors. Wonder at the inspiration of award-winning director Julie Taymor, who created visual images for this show that you'll remember forever. Thrill to the pulsating rhythms of the African pride lands and an unforgettable score, including Elton John and Tim Rice's Oscar-winning song, Can You Feel the Love Tonight? And Circle of Life. Disney's The Lion King is on sale as part of the SunTrust Broadway South series now. The show length is 2 hours and 30 minutes, including a 20-minute intermission. They recommend, incidentally, that kids should be at least 5 years old coming to see this, and for evening performances, they think they should be at least 6 years old. Due to the length of the performance, you should use your discretion at all performances, and all children must have a ticket. Well, tickets are available for as low-priced as $22, and they go quite steep after that, but contact the Deepak Ticket Center for more information. And once again, their audio-described performance is Wednesday, January 26th at 1 p.m. And moving on down into February, that's February 25th, it's a Friday evening, Justice Theater Project offers Tuesdays with Maury. It's written by Jeffrey Hatcher and Mitch Albom, based on the book by Mitch Albom. It features David Henderson and John Honeycutt as actors, and it's directed by Andy Hayworth. The New York Times says it is a touching, life-affirming, deeply emotional drama with a generous dose of humor. This heartfelt story explores culture, family, and the meaning of life. Maury advises Mitch to reject the popular culture in favor of creating his own. The individualistic culture Maury encourages Mitch to create for himself is a culture founded on love, acceptance, and human goodness, a culture that upholds a set of ethical values unlike the mores that popular culture endorses. Popular culture, Maury says, is founded on greed, selfishness, and superficiality, which he urges Mitch to overcome, making a place where humanity can grow. During each show, representatives from the ALS Association, the Jim Catfish Hunter chapter, will be in the lobby to answer questions and to talk about ALS in our Triangle community. Experience this phenomenon. This is, once again, Tuesdays with Maury by the Justice Theater Project, and it will be shown with audio description on February 25th. It's an 8 p.m. show. Okay, that's the stage. Now let's move to the screen, where we've got four movies that are available with audio description in the not-too-distant future here. They are Gulliver's Travels, Little Fockers, Tron, The Legacy, and uh, I'm sorry, folks. Make that three movies with audio description. Anyway, Gulliver's Travels is currently playing at the Beaver Creek in Apex, and it'll play through the 30th, which is Thursday of this week, and they can be reached at 362-7342. That's 919-362-7342. If you're thinking about Gulliver's Travels, be sure to call the Beaver Creek Theater and let them know you want to know the show times for Gulliver's Travels. Now, on the 31st, which is this Friday, it's a Little Fockers opens at the Beaver Creek in Apex. And they looks like they're running at least a week, possibly longer. It also opens on the 31st at the White Oak Stadium in Garner, and it'll be opening on the 7th of January at the North Hills Stadium in Raleigh. We'll definitely be getting a review of this coming up here. Meantime, what's currently playing at the White Oak in Garner is Tron, The Legacy, which plays through the 30th, which is Thursday of this week. So those are your three movies. Gulliver's Travels at the Beaver Creek in Apex through the 30th, this Thursday. Tron, The Legacy, playing through the 30th at the White Oak in Garner. And Little Fockers opening at both of those theaters on the 31st and running for at least a week. And finally, Little Fockers running from the 7th of January through the 13th of January at the North Hills in Raleigh. The phone number is once again here. For Beaver Creek Stadium, it's 362-7342. That's 362-7342. For the White Oak in Garner, it's 779-7499. That's 779-7499. And the North Hills in Raleigh is 786-4494. That's 786-4494. Be sure you call ahead of time to find out the exact show times. And, of course, they'll be glad to share with you the information about whatever information they have about upcoming audio-described movies. Okay, let's move on to some reviews here. We'll start with Gulliver's Travels, and the cast includes Jack Black, Jason Segel, Emily Blunt, Billy Connolly, Amanda Peet, Catherine Tate, James Corden, and Ali Alexander. The director is Bob Letterman. This is a comedy and action-adventure film. It runs for 85 minutes, and it's rated PG. They say that it has brief, rude humor with mild language and action, so that's your advisory there. The synopsis? Well, in a contemporary reimagining of the classic tale, Gulliver is a big-talking mailroom clerk who, after he's mistakenly assigned a travel piece on the Bermuda Triangle, suddenly finds himself a giant among men when he washes ashore on the hidden island of Lilliput, home of a population of very tiny people. At first enslaved by the diminutive and industrious Lilliputians, and later declared their hero, Gulliver comes to learn that it's how big you are on the inside that counts. That's the synopsis. Now a review by Roger Ebert, who gives it a 3 out of a possible 4 stars. Mr. Ebert says, I want to tread carefully here, and not because I might step on a Lilliputian and squish him. I want to explain who Gulliver's Travels is for and who it might not be for. One person it is definitely for is Gloria Dement, the 84-year-old grandmother who wrote AP film critic Christy LeMire in horror after spending $96 to take 4 generations of her family to see The Nutcracker in 3D. She wrote, It broke my heart when we left the theater that my little great-granddaughters, ages 5 to 13, had sad, little, confused faces. Believe me, Auntie Glow, there would have been smiles on those faces after this movie. However, this is not really a movie for Jack Black fans. Not the Jack Black of School of Rock, for sure. They're used to seeing Jack with his shirt off, but to see their bad boy getting tiny cannonballs embedded in his belly may not be what they have in mind. Not even when he sticks out his gut and the cannonballs pop out again and demolish an enemy armada. He is standing up to his waist in the ocean at the time. No, not near the shore, way out where a big enemy navy has massed its warships. Not only is Lemuel Gulliver, played by Jack Black, a giant in the land of the Lilliputs, but the sea surrounding their land is apparently Lilliputian as well. About 3 feet deep, I'd guess, judging by Jack Black's not-towering stature. As the film opens, Gulliver is celebrating his 10th year in the mailroom of a New York newspaper. He has a crush on Darcy, the travel editor, played by Amanda Peet, who is a good sport and gives him an assignment to write a piece from Bermuda. He falls asleep on board his speedboat and enters the Bermuda Triangle, which, come to think of it, of course, is where Lilliput must be. In the land of these six-inch people, he awakens to find himself tied down with ropes staked to the ground, which is also what happened in Jonathan Swift's classic, but boy, would Swift not ever recognize the rest of this story. Gulliver soon finds himself not a captive, but more like a hero, a god, an advisor, and a warrior for the Lilliputians, whose society resembles an Arthurian, not a Swiftian, fantasy. On an island with a seaside castle, they wear the costumes and play the roles of medieval romantic swashbucklery, and they talk the talk. To paraphrase one Lilliputian, "Whyeth musteth we always speaketh with all these eths?" The kingdom centers on the beloved and beautiful Princess Mary, played by Emily Blunt, and the rivals for her affection, King Theodore, played by Billy Connolly, and General Edward, played by Chris O'Dowd. Lemuel is able to participate in these intrigues by peering over ramparts or taking a seat on battlements. He is about 12 times as tall as they are. I wonder how he can so easily hear their little voices. If he said, "Speak up," they'd be blown away. No matter. Darcy, of course, turns up in search of Lemuel, and battles wage, tables are turned, romances blossom, and so on. It just occurred to me that you may be imagining this is an animated film, and that Jack Black is voicing Lemuel Gulliver. Not at all. This is live action, and despite the 3D, it's sort of old-fashioned. Not that that's a bad thing. The problem is to contain Lemuel and the Lilliputians in the same frame when he towers over them. It makes for either long shots or shots of Black's enormous face peering at the little folks from over the edge of something. As he stands on the beach with the little fellas, I was immediately reminded of the genie in Michael Powell's masterpiece, The Thief of Baghdad, from 1940. I wouldn't describe the special effects as seamless, far from it, but that brings us back around to our grandmother, Gloria Dement. Do you think her great-grandchildren are going to be sitting there saying, "You can see that's done with green screen"? See, I don't think so. They're going to be saying, "Thanks, Grandma Glow. This was ever so much better than that scary Nutcracker movie." There isn't even a single Holocaust reference anywhere in it. Well, in all fairness, the entire Earth is ripped to pieces in a brilliant cartoon that plays before the feature. Scrat's Continental Crackup stars the manic creature from the Ice Age movies who would destroy the globe to save a nut. Okay, so that's what Roger Ebert has to say about Gulliver's Travels. Keep in mind he did give it 3 out of a possible 4 stars. Okay, let's take a look at Little Fockers. It's the movie that's playing at all three of these theaters in the not-so-distant future here. The cast includes Ben Stiller and Robert De Niro, Owen Wilson, Blythe Danner, Terry Polo, Jessica Alba, Laura Dern, Harvey Keitel, and Barbara Streisand. The movie's directed by Paul Weitz. It is a comedy with a PG-13 rating that runs 98 minutes. They do give an advisory for the mature sexual humor throughout, for language, and for some drug content. The synopsis here, they tell us it has taken 10 years. Two little fuckers with wife Pam and countless hurdles for Greg to finally get in with his tightly wound father-in-law, Jack. After the cash-strapped dad takes a job moonlighting for a drug company, however, Jack is suspicious about his favorite male nurse. The suspicions about his favorite male nurse come roaring back when Greg and Pam's entire clan, including Pam's lovelorn ex, Kevin, descends for the twins' birthday party. Greg must prove to the skeptical Jack that he's fully capable as the man of the house. But with all the misunderstandings, spying, and covert missions, will Greg pass Jack's final test and become the family's next patriarch? Will the circle of trust be broken for good? Well, the review we've got here is a 3 out of a possible 4 stars. This is by Ann Biancholi of the Hearst Movie Writer. She says that there are laughter and squirms, and she gives it 3 out of a possible 4 stars. She says, Little Fockers is a semi-painful, semi-amusing sequel that reunites the battling in-laws from Meet the Parents and its follow-up, Meet the Fockers. When we first meet Ben Stiller's Greg Focker, he was a nice, neurotic male nurse who submitted to lie detector tests by Jack, his girlfriend's father, an ex-spy played by Robert De Niro, in squinting psycho mode. In the next movie, his parents meet her parents, generating loudmouth flakiness and one repulsive bowl of fondue. As the third movie opens, we find the afflicted Greg Focker with his now wife, Pam, played by Terry Polo, enjoying life with 5-year-old twins. Greg seems to be getting along with his kooky father-in-law. Pam's airily obsessive ex-beau, Kevin, played by Owen Wilson, seems to be engaged to some babe named Svetlana. Everything seems to be fine, which in screenwriting terms means that everything is about to disintegrate. Sure enough, Jack has a heart attack. After defibrillating himself with his polygraph machine, he pressures Greg to become more responsible as pater familias, the godfather, Jack calls him. Then Jessica Alba arrives as Andy Garcia, an overeager pharmaceutical rep, hawking a Viagra-like pill for heart patients. And from this, one can infer that some funny business involving said drug will occur. Little Fockers has less to do with the littlest Fockers than the clan's developmentally stunted grown-ups, all of them behaving exactly as they behaved in movies past. Greg is a dipstick, Jack is a nut. The women are sane but inconsequential, being forced to sit out most of the nonsense. Everyone's a little older and a little more frayed around the edges as they've been through this carp and wine with gay jokes routine a few too many times. Some of it induces laughter, some of it induces squirms. This is the first Focker installment not directed by Jay Roach, who did a good job balancing the yucks with the more outrageous gross-outs. That comic revolting parody shouldn't be much of a challenge for American Pie's Paul Weitz, and yet the skeevier bits aren't especially funny. Now, there is an advisory here, mature sexual humor throughout, language, and some drug content. And this article originally appeared in the San Francisco Chronicle. Okay, so that's the 3 out of 4 possible star review that Anne Bancoli gives to Little Fockers. Once again, it opens this Friday, that is New Year's Eve, at the Beaver Creek in Apex and at the White Oak in Garner. And it opens a week later, that is to say on January 7th, at the North Hills Stadium in Raleigh, where it plays through the 13th. And we're not sure how long it'll play in Apex and Garner, but we know it'll be at least a week. And now Tron, The Legacy, with a cast including Jeff Bridges, Garrett Hedlund, Olivia Wilde, Bruce Boxleitner, Michael Sheen, James Frain, and Bo Garrett. The director is Joseph Kosinski. It's an action-adventure sci-fi fantasy with a PG rating. It runs for 127 minutes, and there is an advisory for sequences of sci-fi action violence and brief, mild language. Tron is a high-tech adventure set in a digital world that's unlike anything ever captured on the big screen. Sam Flynn, the tech-savvy 27-year-old son of Kevin Flynn, looks into his father's disappearance and finds himself pulled into the same world of fierce programs and gladiatorial games where his father has been living for 25 years. Along with Kevin's loyal confidant, father and son embark on a life-and-death journey across a visually stunning cyber universe that has become far more advanced and exceedingly dangerous. Roger Ebert's review begins, "To the sad story of a father who was trapped inside a snowman for the winter, that is, Jack Frost, we must now add Tron Legacy, where the father has been trapped inside a software program for 20 years. Yes, young Sam Flynn has grown up an orphan because his dad was seduced and abducted by a video game. Now a call comes for the young hero to join his old dad in throwing virtual frisbees at the evil programs threatening the digital world. This is a movie well beyond the possibility of logical explanation. Since the Tron universe exists entirely within chips, don't bother yourself about where the physical body of Kevin Flynn, played by Jeff Bridges, has been for the last 2 decades. It must surely have been somewhere, because we can see that it has aged. The solution, I suppose, is that this is a virtual world and it can do anything it feels like. But how exactly does a flesh-and-blood 20-year-old get inside it? And what does he eat?" Joseph Kosinski's Tron Legacy steps nimbly over such obstacles and hits the ground running. Among the show's real-world technology is a performance by Jeff Bridges as Kevin Flynn at 2 different ages, now and 20 years ago. The original Tron was made 28 years ago, but that would have made young Sam Flynn, his son, nearly 30, which is too old for the hero in a story of this sort. The ideal age would have been around 12. In a flashback, we see Kevin, lord of a mighty software corporation, taking leave of his son as a child. At first you think Jeff Bridges looks younger in this scene because of makeup or Botox or something. Then you realize this is Bridges' body and voice, but his face has been rendered younger by special effects. They're uncanny. The real Bridges turns up later inside the program, whiskery and weathered, but the computer-generated image version of younger Jeff sticks around to play Clue, a digital doppelganger he created who now desires, you know this is coming, to control the world. Kevin and Sam reconcile and bond. They join other cyberspace allies, notably including the beguiling Quora, played by Olivia Wilde, who Cyber Kevin has apparently been fathering instead of poor orphan Sam. Does this symbolize the ways video games can destroy real-life relationships? Well, could be. Anyway, that's Tron Legacy, and guess what, folks? We're running out of time for this episode of Movie Reviews and Theater Previews. Tune in again in a couple of weeks. Listen up. I'm Kirk Benrud for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Hope you enjoyed this show. Check with me again in 2 weeks. Bye-bye for now.